Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 346. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about a mile-high city in the tropics that's been nicknamed the City of the Eternal Spring, Medellin, Colombia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. In the first one, a study has shown that one way to fend off jet lag is to starve yourself for 16 hours to re-engage your new body clock. So it turns out that when the airlines stopped serving you food, they were just thinking of you. Speaking of airlines that think of you, there was an article in Time magazine, Why an Airline That Travelers Love is Failing. And it was about Virgin America, which has had very good ratings, has won a lot of awards, but is losing money. They've had an operating loss of $447 million since they first opened in 2007. It turns out that passengers are not willing to pay enough for the kind of service that they offer. Speaking of services, Royal Princess is going to add a TV studio with live shows and events to some of their ships. Now, I understand why you might want to have a cooking show or even a special musical event on a ship, but I'm not sure why I want to stay in my cabin to watch it. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show David Lee, who's come to talk to us about Medellin, Colombia. And David is from GoBackpacking.com and MedellinLiving.com. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
And I'm a little surprised that we're just finally getting around to getting you in the show. I have known you now for, I don't know what it is, 3 years or something like that, even in the real world. So I am sorry that it took us this long.
That's okay. I've actually thought about the chance to talk to you about Medellin for a couple of years. So I'm glad we finally get the chance to talk about the city.
Now, this is a city that if we were talking 20 years ago, we probably wouldn't be talking about, let's go pack our bags and go to Medellin.
No, that was when Pablo Escobar still ran the city and his Medellin drug cartel was terrorizing the city and the Colombians living there. So it was really closed off to tourism for that reason until even the late 90s, early 2000s.
But I know you were saying, what was it just last week? Someone was naming Medellin one of the top 10 international cities to go to?
It was actually the Wall Street Journal. They chose 25 innovative cities around the world that readers could vote on in terms of which is the most innovative. And Medellin was one of the 25 cities that was chosen for that poll, which is a reflection of the local government's investment in public works projects.
Interesting. So why should we go to Medellin and what should we see?
Well, for me, the city is just absolutely beautiful. And the more I travel, the more I see how unique it is. It lies in a valley, so there are mountains that completely surround it, tall green mountains, not the kinds of mountains that get snow. And the elevation on the floor of the valley is 1,500 meters. So it's about the height of Denver, Colorado, about a mile high. So this unique geography gives it a really comfortable climate. And because of its location near the equator, that climate is year-round. So it's been nicknamed City of the Eternal Spring for its constant spring-like temperatures. There's a rainy season and a dry season that correspond with the summer, winter. So the dry season is December to February when they get less rain. And it's just a beautiful place to be. I've heard people liken it to San Diego, which I've never been to, but it was my first time really living in a place where you didn't have the four seasons. You didn't have a cold winter to deal with or a really hot summer. It was just really pleasant all year round. And that was a big deal for me. I just really enjoyed living in that kind of an environment. So the weather and the scenery are two of the big things that draw people to Medellin, not just to visit, but to live there.
And for travelers, would you recommend the dry season would be the best time to come see it?
Absolutely. And December, in fact, is my favorite month of the year to be there because the entire city and all the surrounding towns decorate for Christmas. And it's unlike anything I've ever seen in the United States or any other city. It's just there's millions of Christmas lights hanging up. It's incredible. The pictures that I've tried to take of it don't really do it justice. And everyone's in a really good mood, festive mood. People light off fireworks every night around the city, which can be a little annoying. But it's a really, really wonderful atmosphere in December. And the weather is at its best as well because there's not as much rain.
And you alluded to it, but you haven't just passed through Medellin, but you've spent some time living there in the last few years.
Correct. Actually, when I first arrived there, I just fell in love with the city instantly after having spent 14 months traveling around the world. So I felt like I could compare it to all the places I'd already been, and there was no place like it. So I immediately stopped, and I spent 6 months living there in 2009. And then in 2010, I returned to spend another 6 months, as well as 2011. So in total, I spent a year and a half living in Medellin.
And when friends come to visit, what do you take them to see?
Well, that's a good question, because the city doesn't have a lot of sightseeing activities. One of the must-sees, though, is the Botero Plaza. Fernando Botero is Colombia's most famous artist, and he's from Antioquia, which is the state that Medellin's the capital of. So he donated 20 or more of his large bronze sculptures to the city, and they're in a park in the downtown area called Plaza Botero, which is right off of a metro stop, so it's very easy to get there. And that's usually seen as a symbol of the city, his artwork or his sculptures. You'll see that image on guidebook covers, or Anthony Bourdain walked through that park, that plaza, on his episode of No Reservations, which was partially shot in Medellin. Because Botero has such a unique style, he basically paints fat people, and he paints fat horses. Everything that he paints is sort of a very large, round figure.
So he's sort of the anti-Greco artist.
Yes, yes.
And where else would we go?
Well, Pablo Escobar is a part of the history of Medellin and Colombia. There's no escaping it. So tourists are curious about him and his impact on the city. So there are some sites that you can see around the city that are related to Pablo Escobar. You can go to a couple of them on your own for free. And I put that information on the Medellin Living blog. But there are also now tours that are organized that you can go with a group of people and see several different places of importance, including the place where he was killed, which was on a rooftop of one of his safe houses. And you can also visit his family plot in a cemetery in a city south of Medellin. That's actually one of the first things I did back in 2009, because I really didn't know what there was to do in the city. And because I associate the city with Pablo Escobar, that's something I sought out.
When I said that was 20 years ago, I didn't realize that I was pretty close to right there. I guess he was killed 19 years ago.
Yes, I believe it was 1993. Mm-hmm. In terms of the city, his impact is still within the psyche of people there. So when I went to find the place where he was killed before it was widely known, I was walking around in the rain with a Colombian friend of mine, and we're asking some of the people that lived in the neighborhood or where exactly it was, and they didn't want to remember him, basically, or the person didn't know. But basically, there's just this desire to move on, and I think that they've done that very well. I got asked a lot when I first arrived in 2009 why I was in Colombia. There's this curiosity that I really appreciated from the people, why their country, because they're so aware of the negative stereotypes that exist in the media and sort of the outside world, that they were curious why foreigners were coming to visit. I don't get that question as much anymore. I think that the increase in tourism has it's sort of become more normal. They're a little bit more used to it now than they were even in 2009. So things are definitely changing there, and I'm hoping that it benefits the city and its people.
So you have been there, you say 2009, and then for a couple of years after that. What did change in that period? You said attitudes have changed, but has the city changed a lot physically?
Well, I would say that there's always apartment buildings that are going up. I was just visiting earlier this year for a few weeks in September, and I was just amazed that there. Every time I go back, there are new apartment buildings that are going up. So, especially within the wealthier part of the city, of a neighborhood called El Poblado. So there's definitely a lot of investment in real estate that continues to happen there. Within the main nightlife area called Parque Eras, there's a lot of new businesses that are opening up, new restaurants, new bars, new boutique shops. So that entire area is expanding outward, and that's usually where the tourists stay, either in hostels or in hotels. That's where they tend to go out at night, especially on the weekends. So that's sort of a sign for me of the growth that's happening in the city is can see building of apartments as well as the growth of smaller businesses in the main nightlife area.
Okay. So we're going to go to that area, and I'm going to ask you that area's name again.
The name of the main nightlife district is Parque Lleras. It's Lleras.
Okay. And then we'll take the cable car up the mountain. We'll do some restaurants. Is there anything else you want to see in Medellin itself? Otherwise, my next question is going to be side trips.
Okay. Well, you did mention the cable cars, and that's something unique about Medellin. They've built gondola-style cable cars that they go up into the poorer neighborhoods of the city as a way to give those populations access to the downtown area, to the universities, to businesses, so that people are able to commute down into the city more easily.
So that sounds like then like Rio, that the flat land is sort of the richer neighborhoods and that the poorer neighborhoods go up the mountains?
Basically, yes. Although in Medellin, the wealthier neighborhood is also on the hill. It's both, basically. The poorer people do live higher up on the mountains. And so, yeah, they have great views up there. But it also makes accessing the city down below much more difficult. So in order to help with that, the city has developed these gondolas that go up into some of the poor neighborhoods as a way to try and give those people better access to the city and better opportunities to go to school and to work. And there have been some that they've helped and helped in ways they may not have expected as well, because since these gondolas are on the metro line, cost under $1 to use to get anywhere in the city, you can go up there as a tourist and get some really scenic views of the entire city and the valley. And so that's helped bring some additional money up into those neighborhoods as well through tourism, if people get out and walk around a little bit.
Okay.
So that's one of the innovative ways that Medellin is trying to help people.
And if I wanted to interact with the people of Medellin as they are normally interacting, where would I go? Is the theater, the soccer? I mean, what is big in Medellin for the locals?
Soccer is huge in Medellin and Colombia. Medellin has two professional soccer teams, Atlético Nacional and Independiente Medellin. And sporting is hugely popular there. I actually went to 3 games in my first 6 months there. The biggest game that happens is the Super Classico, and that's when the two city teams play each other, and it's just nuts at the stadium. I've never seen security like that at a sporting event that I've been to in the United States. I was frisked several times before getting into the stadium, and inside the stadium, on the ground, on the field, were riot police in full gear, and I actually saw them going up into the stands and trying to keep people in order. The flags that were unfurled in the stadium literally took up from the field all the way to the upper deck. It was the biggest banner that I've ever seen. It was just absolutely crazy. It was everything I thought a South American soccer game would be. Interestingly, I actually thought it was more exciting than the game I'd go to later in Buenos Aires. They're really passionate about soccer in Medellin and Colombia. So that's definitely a good way to sort of get a feel for what the locals like to do in their free time.
When you moved there, what was the biggest surprise?
I would say the biggest surprise came when I learned that I have some sense of rhythm when it comes to dancing. Because my entire life, I was a complete wallflower, and I never liked dancing. I was really shy about it. And when I got to Medellin, I started hearing the salsa music everywhere, in the streets, in little shops, and in taxis. And it just really, I don't know, I connected with it. I loved the music, and I started learning how to dance salsa. And the feedback I would get from the Colombian girls that I started dancing with is that I had good rhythm. And this was so outside of my normal way of thinking. I didn't really know what to do. But it was that kind of early encouragement that gave me the confidence to continue with it. And I continued with it on a regular basis for several years. And I'd go out dancing a couple of times a week, even when I was back living in the United States. And that was a really fun period for me, just sort of discovering the Latin dances and the music and that experience of going out and spending my Friday or Saturday night dancing, which is something I never would have done previously. That was a big surprise for me.
Now, my understanding is that your command of Spanish was pretty good before you settled there, or before you started spending significant time there. How hard would it be to get around if you didn't speak Spanish?
Well, actually, I had taken Spanish 20 years earlier when I was in high school. But beyond that, no, I didn't speak Spanish before I got to Colombia. So I can better answer that question. The younger people, the students, tend to speak some English, but they can be shy about it. But it definitely helps if you want to build friendships or relationships with the Colombians if you can speak Spanish, speak to them in their own language. And they especially love it if you can use the local slang. And I found that even as I was just starting to sort of self-teach myself Spanish while I was there, that if you start with the local slang, that's an easy way for them to connect with you, because you're not just speaking Spanish, but you're speaking to them in the same way that they speak to their friends and their family. So even if you're just starting out, if you learn the words that are used specifically in Medellin and Antioquia, and even in Colombian slang in general, that's a great way to get started.
And are there two or three that you could give us that would help us fit in better?
One of the ones I heard most often was chevere. It's C-H-E-V-E-R-E. And that basically means cool. So you can say that all you want, chevere. This is cool, that's cool, he's cool, whatever. And you'll instantly sort of be understood. And when I was traveling other parts of South America, if I'd use that term, people would know that I wasn't from that country, for example, Argentina or Chile. And they sometimes would actually say, where'd you learn your Spanish? That's from Colombia. So that was really interesting to me. Other words are escaping me at the moment since you put me on the spot.
That's what I do. What was the best day you had in Medellin? There had to be a day that really led you to say, I could live here for 6 months at a time.
Well, it might have been the very first day. Well, the second day. The first day I arrived and I went straight to the hostel. But I had already gotten my first glimpse of the city. And it was just so beautiful and peaceful that it didn't sort of reconcile with the images I had gotten from Hollywood movies and from the news reports that I grew up with as a kid of Colombia. That was the first thing that struck me. But on my first full day of sightseeing, I went out with an Argentinian doctor from the hostel, and we basically did the touristy things. We went to Plaza Botero. We went to the botanical gardens, which is rather small compared to some cities I've been to, but it does give you a break from the traffic and noise in the city if you go there. And then across the street from the botanical gardens was the new aquarium that had just opened up. So there were a lot of people that were going there. It's, I think, the largest freshwater aquarium in South America or Latin America. So I was expecting it to be really, really big. And I was hoping there'd be sharks and cool stuff like that. But there weren't. There were no sharks.
Not as many freshwater sharks down.
There were fish from the local rivers and that kind of stuff. But it was more interesting to me, not so much the wildlife, but just seeing the people there and the kids there and the families there that were visiting this new aquarium. And then outside of the aquarium is Parque Explora, which is a really interesting park. It's basically all these physics experiments where you can sort of learn about physics through using these different, I don't know how to say it,
like tools. Like a lever or, and things like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And it's not just for kids, because the doctor I was with, he was having a good time with them as well. So that was fun. And then we walked over to Pueblito Paisa, which is a small mock pueblo that sits on top of a hill. And from up there, you've got 360-degree views of the city and the valley. And we were up there just as the sun was starting to set. So one of the things I like about Medellin is it's beautiful during the day, but at night, when all the lights on the hills start coming on, it sort of looks like the mountainsides are just filled with stars, little twinkling lights. So I got to see that for the first time as well. I thought that was really cool.
You got a chance to meet people there. Who's the most memorable local that you've met?
I guess I'd go with my salsa teacher, Yamile, because I spent so much time with her. When I started taking lessons in 2009, I was taking group lessons, but then I also took a few private ones. And I found that I learned a lot faster when I was in the private lesson. It was just me and the instructor, so we were able to go over things very quickly and practice them right away, and not worry about how fast other people in the group were learning. So I started taking private lessons with her when I went back in 2010. And I just really enjoyed it. And I began recommending all my friends her as well. Benny Lewis, the Irish polyglot, came to visit Medellin in 2010. And I recommended he take lessons from her. And he had a good experience as well.
And what is her name or her studio or...?
Her name is Yamile Herrera, and I'm not going to get the name of her studio right at the moment, but I can share that with you afterwards. It's been growing, because the last time I visited her, she had gone from working as part of another studio to opening her own with her dance partner. And then I most recently heard they outgrew the studio space that they had, and they had to move into a bigger studio. So I'm really excited for her. And it's not just foreigners that are taking salsa lessons. Colombians are taking them too. There's this idea that Colombians are sort of born knowing how to dance, but that's not the that's not the case. I learned that usually they grow up with dancing in their families at family events, birthdays, weddings, celebrations. And so they learn the basics of how to salsa or how to merengue with their fathers or their brothers or their cousins or whoever. But they don't learn more complicated moves. So if they do want to sort of progress in that direction, then they'll start taking lessons. And then there are some Colombians that don't even feel like they have a sense of rhythm, and they'll start. While I was still taking group classes, I had a class with two women who were in their mid-40s. And they were taking the same salsa lessons that I was.
When you're not in Medellin, what picture that you've taken makes you homesick for Medellin?
I'd have to say it's really just this image that I have of the valley from the last apartment that I stayed in, the one I spent 10 months in. Just being able to wake up in the morning, look out the window and see the blue skies and the green mountains on the horizon. That to me is what I miss about the city. I found it inspiring. In 2009, I had the two blogs going, the new one, Medellin Living, when I just started living there. And I found waking up in the morning, just in it, being there, just inspired me to want to write and work and figure out how I could afford to stay there longer. And I quickly found that teaching English was not the right way for me to do that. It's a hugely popular approach because people ask me how they can find a job teaching English there all the time. But for me personally, I had no experience and I wasn't getting anywhere when I tried to find work that way. So I just focused on my blogs, which is something I knew how to do. And it took a little bit of patience, but eventually I was making enough from my websites to be able to go back and live there.
One question that I almost always ask, and I get in trouble when I don't ask it because it's a popular question with people, is when you're in Colombia, when you're in Medellin, what about it makes you feel close to home? And by home, I mean where you grew up. And what makes you feel furthest from home?
I guess I would have to say the cable television is something that makes me feel close to home. I remember having gotten there and realized that there was this closeness to American culture that I felt that I hadn't necessarily felt in other places in Africa or in Asia. And cable television and the number of channels that I was getting in Colombia versus what you'd get in the U.S. was more similar than other countries I'd been to. And that sort of was like a gauge for me in terms of comfort, because it was a little bit closer to the culture I grew up in, even if I had some more channels in English than I'd had in other places I'd visited. That was something that I found comforting. What made me feel furthest from home? I guess it would be the Spanish that's being spoken. And it was my first time living in another country, in a country where I didn't speak the language. And I had to sort of survive with my very, very limited Spanish. And I found it motivating. It motivated me to try and learn Spanish. I was too stubborn to take classes, so I just tried to study on my own, reading newspapers, magazines, and I had a Colombian friend that was giving me some private lessons every week. So it was definitely the language that made it really feel like I wasn't in the United States anymore.
When I go there, any places that you would recommend that I stay or recommend that I eat?
I can definitely recommend a place to eat because I've been doing my best to review all the restaurants in the city, or at least all of the...
It's a dirty, thankless job, but somebody has to do it.
I know. It's crazy. But my favorite restaurant is called El Cielo, which means sky in Spanish. It's the first time I've gone to a restaurant that specializes in molecular gastronomy.
Okay.
And it was opened by a young Colombian chef.
And molecular gastronomy is the half-cooking, half-physics...
Yes, yes, and chemistry.
And chemistry and liquid nitrogen and other odd mechanisms.
Exactly, exactly. A more scientific approach to cooking. I like to think of it like that. I went there because I did want to try this kind of cuisine, and I also wanted to try at one of the top restaurants in the city. And I went with another blogger who's a chef from California who is passing through town. And so he was a little bit more used to this kind of dining experience. But it was the first time I spent 4 hours at a restaurant having dinner. We got there at 8 o'clock and we left around midnight. It was a very small restaurant. It didn't have a lot of tables. There may be 15 or 16 tables of varying sizes. But the service, first of all, was excellent. Sometimes in Latin America, foreigners don't really understand the service and that it's sort of lackadaisical. But the service at this restaurant was on par with what you'd expect at a fine dining restaurant in New York or Los Angeles. And they were able to explain the dishes in English as well as in Spanish. And the way that it works is, well, you can order from the menu, but what we did was we did an 11-moment tasting menu. They actually call it moments instead of courses because not all of the moments are actually something you eat. For example, when the sort of the service begins, they come out with a big, I don't know if it's an oyster shell or some kind of seashell, and they've got this little sort of pill presented on it and a bowl of water, and basically you use tweezers and you pick up this pill and you put it in the water and it expands and you see that it's actually a towel to wash your hands. So that's a moment. And then later on, you actually wash your hands in a chocolate cream sauce, which sounds really weird to be doing.
It sounds like a practical joke is what it sounds like.
But the funny thing is, after you've washed your hands and they pour water over them and they're all clean, they smell like chocolate. So you sort of understand why the chef may have wanted that to be a moment in the course of the menu or the course of the dinner. And then at the end, they also present you with some rose petals. And when you rub those on your hands, they have a moisturizer in them. Sure. And it leaves your hands feeling really soft. So those are the non-food moments. And then in between, they've got the different foods. There was soup, and there was a fish course, and there was a meat course, and there were a couple of desserts that were offered. And it was just a wonderful experience. I had a friend there. We had a bottle of wine, and we just sort of spent the whole night in that restaurant experiencing the food the way that the chef wanted us to experience it. And it was just one of the best dining experiences of my life. And the bill came to about $100 per person, which in the U.S. easily would have been $200 or more, especially considering we had gotten that bottle of wine. But if we didn't get the wine, it would have only been about $70 per person, which is amazing to me. And that really started something in my travels where I go to very nice restaurants in South American cities or even Asian cities for that matter, places that are normally very budget friendly. I go to a very nice restaurant because I know that I can get an excellent deal. So the name of that restaurant, El Cielo.
On the flip side, best street food in Medellin, how you save up the money to to go to the big restaurant.
Yes, there's definitely a lot of street food in Medellin in Colombia. My favorite is an arepa con queso. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, an arepa is sort of a staple food in Colombia. It's sort of like a pancake. They come in all different forms and sizes, but it's not a pancake in the Western sense, just sort of in terms of it's around. An arepa is a dish made of ground corn or cooked flour, and it's kind of in the shape of a circle. And what you'll find in Colombia is that you can either get them with cheese, and the cheese
queso
is sort of cooked within the arepa, or you can get it topped with chicken or beef or eggs. It's popular all times of day. So in the morning, you'll have an arepa con huevo, an arepa with an egg on top. In the evening, it could be an arepa with chicken on top. But my favorite street food is an arepa con queso. And they're not at all good for you. It's just a lot of cholesterol and fat and butter and cheese. But just eating one of these, it's about the size of your palm. Just eating one of them is like an entire meal. You won't want to eat anything else for a few hours. They're really heavy. But there's this sweet and saltiness sort of going on with them that it's just a really unique flavor and definitely something I crave when I'm not there. And they only cost about $1 on the street, so it's a super cheap.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Medellin?
The taxi drivers are very sensitive about their cars. They're these little compact yellow taxis. And they get upset when you slam the door shut. In New York, they're big sedans used as taxis, and you close the door with some force and no big deal. But in Medellin, these are more fragile cars. I guess you could say they're cheaper cars. And so if you close it with that same amount of force that you might do so in New York, that you'll get a scowl from the taxi drivers. Sometimes they'll even say something. And actually, a lot of them have learned that tourists, especially Americans, will close their doors with force. So they don't even let you close the door when you're exiting the taxi. They'll put their hand out in the back seat and actually like put their hand on the door so that you can't physically close it, because they don't want you to slam it shut. That I've only experienced in Medellin.
That's funny. I said we were going to talk about side trips. We're rapidly running out of time. Are there good side trips that we should know about from Medellin?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked me that, because one of the things that's unique in I've found in Colombia is the culture around the pueblos and the people escaping the large cities like Bogota and Cali and Medellin for the pueblos on the weekends and holidays.
And when you say pueblo, you just mean country, village, versus a pueblo like the southwestern U.S., which is a adobe building.
Yes, I'm talking about a small village, yeah. And they're in these really beautiful settings. My favorite is Guadalupe, and that's about a two-hour bus ride from Medellin. It costs a few dollars to get there. And it's on the side of a lake, and it's just a great way to spend the weekend, because you get away from the traffic and the stress of being in the big city, and you've got more scenic views. And actually, when I went to Guadalupe on the lake, you can do a boat tour of the former homes of Pablo Escobar, which I thought was really interesting. They've all been either destroyed or repossessed by the government, but he had bought homes for his family, his mom, his security guards on the side of the lake. And you can actually see his former home is just now a cement skeleton of what it used to be. It was totally destroyed. But what's interesting about the lake is that it's a man-made lake. There was actually a town underneath it before that area was filled with water. And when you're on the boat tour, you'll actually come to a point where there's a big metal cross that's coming out of the water. And that's actually
the
top of a church, yes. So there are a couple of other pueblos within a couple of hours of Medellin that are popular as well. Jardín is a bit more up in the mountains. Santa Fe de Antioquia is just an hour away, and that's at a lower altitude, so it's a bit hotter there. And then El Peñol is right next to Guadalupe. It's just a 15-minute ride away. And there's a big monolith, a big stone, gigantic rock that sticks out of the ground there. And if you climb up this monolith through the stairs that have been built into the side of it, you get really, really pretty views of the surrounding countryside.
Before we get to my last two questions, is there anything else that I haven't asked the right question to get the right answer that we should know about Medellin?
Well, I would say that my goal in promoting the city is not to say that it's without dangers. There is a risk, as there is in going to any big Latin American city like Rio or Buenos Aires, of regular street crime. But people still go to those cities and experience them knowing the risk. And sometimes people do get robbed. That's just a reality of traveling. But my goal with Colombia and Medellin is not to say that those things can't happen. It's to say that, yes, there's a risk, but don't pass up the opportunity to see this really beautiful country and city out of fear alone. Fear of what you've seen in the news growing up, or fear of what you've seen in Hollywood movies and things like that. Because it's an absolutely beautiful city, and the people there are amazingly friendly and very warm and welcoming. So that's another thing that I haven't really talked about. But the paisas, as they're known, the Colombians from that area of the country, are very welcoming, very, very kind, very friendly. It can be a little bit alarming, especially if you're from a big city in the United States.
Okay. Last two questions. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Medellin when what?
You know you're in Medellin when you walk outside your hostel or hotel, and the first thing you hear in the morning is salsa music playing from a taxi or a local store.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Medellin in three words, what three words would you use?
Beautiful, friendly,
okay,
and affordable.
Excellent. Where can people read more about your travel writings and read more about Medellin?
Well, I've got two blogs. One is gobackpacking.com, where I've written quite a bit about Colombia, as well as travels around the world. And specifically for information about Medellin, they can go to medellinliving.com. And Medellin is spelled M-E-D-E-L-L-I-N.
Excellent. Our guest has been David Lee, and I'm so glad that we finally had you on, David. And thanks for coming on and telling us about your love of Medellin.
Thank you, Chris, for having me. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. My email address is rtwdave@gmail.com.
In news of the community, I did want to mention again that The Amateur Traveler is nominated for a podcast award, podcastawards.com. You can vote every day in November if you are interested. But I wanted to mention that before I read two pieces of negative feedback for The Amateur Traveler. Stu wrote about last week's episode, the North Carolina episode, and said, "Your experts seem to be lacking on some issues about Western North Carolina and the Great Smoky Mountains. First off, the Craggy Range and Black Mountain Range are not between the Smokies and Asheville. They are northeast and east of Asheville, respectively. Mount Mitchell was named after the mountain Mitchell discovered and died on. Klingman's Dome was named after Klingman because he thought it was the highest east of the Rockies. The Mountain to the Sea Trail is a long trail that runs from Klingman's Dome to Kill Devil Hills, but does not parallel the Blue Ridge Parkway until you get to Mount Pisgah. At that point, you're approximately 110 miles on the trail from Klingman's Dome and another 60 plus miles from there to Mount Mitchell. Downtown Asheville would take considerably longer than 5 or 10 minutes to walk across. Although Mayfell's isn't a bad restaurant, I suspect it's probably one of the few he's eaten at in the area. It's true there are a lot of excellent non-chain places to eat at in Asheville. I've lived in the Asheville area and worked downtown now for nearly 20 years. The key thing about Asheville is to know we are a great jumping off place for outdoor adventure, from hiking, trail running, mountain biking, rafting, bird watching, kayaking, and even ski resorts nearby. Western North Carolina is especially known for its fast women. By that, I mean running and hiking. Anne Lundblad is the record holder of the JFK 500-mile ultra marathon, as well as many other races. Jennifer Farr Davis hiked the Appalachian Trail in 46 days. That's faster than anyone has completed the 2,100-plus-mile trail. The leaf season doesn't last 2 months down here due to the elevation. The higher elevations are fir trees. At most, it would take 2 weeks for the change to descend from 6,000 feet down to the valleys around 2,200 feet. Well, thank you, Stu, for the corrections. And I'll put that whole letter in this week's episode for those of you who want those details. I've often asked for iTunes reviews to help promote the show. Chris wrote recently and said, "I tried but couldn't figure out how to do it." What you do is you go into the iTunes store and you search for Amateur Traveler, you click on the show, and then below it, it says average ratings, which is, I think, 4.5 stars right now, 211 ratings in the US store. And then you click to rate, you actually click on the number of stars. And then to do a review, there's a button below that under customer review says write a review. And I point that out. There have been 8 reviews this year, 2012, in the iTunes store, 7 of them with 5 stars. And so I would thank you to Bogmandin, Ryan Check, Barakai, David Kimball, Warren Kissel, Tigray Wells, and Akajudi for their 5-star reviews. But we did get one negative review from Ellen T, who said, "I stumbled on this show through the Rick Steves podcast. What I appreciate about The Amateur Traveler is that it covers a diverse range of destinations that one typically might be a one-time adventure for someone because of the remoteness of the preceding reputation or whatnot. That said, I was hoping for more discussion between the host and his guest to narrow down the nooks and crannies and nuances of traveling to these great destinations. The show is formatted around Chris Christensen asking guests about their travel experience in said city slash country slash destination, but the questions he asks don't go beyond anything that isn't explained in A Lonely Planet or a Frommer's Guidebook. In the Bolivia and Quebec podcast, the host barely remarked any reaction to his guests' great experiences other than, okay, haha. I understand the show is geared towards the amateur traveler, but it would be more useful if the information in the show went beyond what you could find in any decent travel blog. So only 2 stars from LNT. If you like the show as much as Ellen did, you can go and give a 2-star review. If you like it better, that would be great too. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, do what Stu did and send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. I'm going to try and include from now on the link to the show notes actually in the lyrics for the show so that it's easier for people to find. So that's where the show notes are if you wanted to comment on it, as well as my email address I'll try and remember to put in there because it seems like a good idea. You can also join the Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler, or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.